Greetings and salutations, fine people. I'm Patty Alvarez. Welcome to The Good Soul, a show where we'll have supercharged chats with everyday humans from all walks of life and unpack what in their story will inspire us all. We'll extract the untapped wisdom, distill it, and serve it up to you in all the right ways that will engage, enlighten, and most of all, inspire growth within your soul. I think people are awesome. So join me on this journey through the hearts and minds of ordinary people to uncover the good soul within you. This is The Good Soul. Hello, friend. Welcome to The Good Soul, episode 13. Today's topic is man's search for meaning. A very, very, very powerful and very telling topic, a very endearing and helpful to me in my life. Man's Search for Meaning was one of many self-help books that have had a profound impact on my life, and we're going to get a lot into the book. Right here to my left, I have my friend Christy Kurtz. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you very much. Yes, happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. Christy was cool because you got Coolione's, man. You walked up to me and you're like, can I be on your podcast?
Let's do this.
I love that. I really think you're the only person that has done that, which is really impressive to me. And I was like, heck yeah, of course. But listen, to all of you, while we're on the topic, if you do want to be on the podcast, don't be shy to text me, email me, or call me, because we're always looking for good content.
Absolutely.
So on that note, Christy is a student at Good Soul Hot Yoga, and that's how we got to know each other. Mm-hmm. She is the newly, I guess you just opened, Foundations Integrative Wellness, mm-hmm. which is your, what do you call it?
Mental health counseling practice. But, you know, down the road, we plan to expand into different wellness areas. So that's kind of why I started it with the wellness aspect versus just counseling.
Okay, that's fantastic. And you're young. You're not even 30.
We're getting it done.
Yeah, I know. I love that about you. I opened my first business, my first retail store. I was 28 years. Oh, no, my first one, I was actually 18 years old. It was a little boutique my sister and I opened.
But very cool.
Yeah, some of the best lessons. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we hear all this, and obviously you went all through school and whatnot, but I didn't. And yeah. I always kind of beat myself up over it that I didn't finish college and I don't have a degree. And all of a sudden now every superintendent and mm-hmm. and kind of like soccer mom is out there saying, who says you need to go to college? You can jump right into a career or trade. That's what I did.
Yeah.
But even though you do have your degree, I still think you're young, and I'm very impressed by what a lot of young people are doing today. So hats off to you.
Thank you.
So I'm going to get a little bit into the history of the book Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor mm-hmm. Frankl. And I'm going to bounce some questions and ideas and theories off of you, and let's see how you integrate these concepts into your practice.
Let's go.
So in 1945, within months of his liberation from a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, Viktor Frankl sat down to write a book. He was 40 years old. Before the war, he worked to be a successful psychologist in Vienna. He wrote the manuscript in 9 days. Although the book tells the story of the unfathomable horrors and suffering he endured as a prisoner at Auschwitz, Dachau, and 2 other camps, the primary purpose of the text is to explore the source of his will to survive. This book is divided into 2 parts. The first part is his experience in the camps and his observations of the people around him. Mm-hmm. And 2 is a concept he came up with called logotherapy. The book went on to sell over 10 million copies in 24 languages. When a piece as powerful as this comes into our lives that helps to improve it in any way, we want to share our knowledge with others so they too can benefit. This is why we're sitting here today doing the Good Soul podcast, to take all of these kind of bits and pieces of wisdom that we've learned and share it with the world, kind of distill it and serve it up to people in ways that they can kind of digest and pick and choose.
Right, right.
So when we first spoke, so we knew you were going to come on. And then about a week ago, I said, so what are we going to talk about? Right. What are we going to talk about? Uh-huh. And the first thing you said was man's search for meaning.
Yes.
Which, I mean, bing. So I've always been a fan of World War II, like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. My first exposure to World War II was a movie by Mel Brooks called To Be or Not to Be. And it was actually, believe it or not, a comedy, which I think is kind of powerful because it really ties into Viktor Frankl's theory.
For sure.
That,
yeah.
That and we'll get into more into that. Chrissy will get more into that. So I don't want to ramble, but the film came out in 1982. I didn't know much about World War II or anything because I was more interested in boys and cheerleading when I was in school. But
right,
but
right.
However, I did learn a lot through that movie in mm-hmm. terms of obviously the foundations of what happened during the Holocaust. And so tell me, what is it about this book? Why was that the first thing that came to mind?
Well, for one thing, World War II, my grandfather fought in that war, and he was Jewish. He's passed, but I always find it very interesting that he was a Jewish man on the American side fighting.
Yes.
So that's kind of, you know, part one of World War II interest of mine. And then on
what
top
was
of
he,
that.
What was he in?
Just he was in the Army.
He was in the Army. Okay. And mm-hmm. where was he deployed to?
Italy.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you know anything about his experience while
Not,
he was there?
No, or? I don't, because he died when I was little. So kind of like knowing those history stories I miss out on, which is something, you know, today I always think back about and I'm like, man, I want to know more. And that's probably part of my spark of, you know, always wanting to watch movies on World War II and things like that.
Sure. Sure. It's funny because we just watched a show on Apple TV called Masters of the Sky, and the navigator, man, do you remember his name? The one who kept throwing up. No, Austin Butler was the star, but the guy who was the navigator was Jewish.
Okay.
And yeah, yeah.
Guy?
The guy that kept getting airsick. Yeah, he was actually the narrator of the whole show. But if you haven't seen that already, you have to watch it. It's on Apple TV. It's a great series. And it just talks about, what do they call it? A platoon. What's it called? Like the air squad. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't remember the number, but it really was fantastic. So anyway, back to you. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, so I'd say that's like the core start of it. And mm-hmm. then, you know, just my mom's side of the family being Jewish and then me kind of integrating that into what I think it is today for myself. Going forward, my husband I met about 8 years ago, and he's also Jewish, raised part Catholic Jewish. Something in his world, I don't know how he stumbled upon the book, but he was like, this is a must read for humanity, basically.
How special. Mm-hmm. And your husband is in business with you. Is he also a psychologist?
Counselor.
Counselor. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he too. So you started the practice together.
We did. Yes.
Fantastic. No kids yet, correct?
No kids. Down the road.
Okay. Yeah, sure. What, tell me a little bit briefly about where you grew up and what made you decide you wanted to be a counselor.
So I grew up in Charlotte, so there's that aspect, kind of a Charlottean.
Yeah, you're rare.
Rare, exactly.
We're all outlanders here,
uh-huh,
so.
100%. Okay. Even my husband's from Jersey, so.
Oh, like, he is? What part?
Northern Kinnelon area.
Oh, okay. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay.
Very cool.
So grew up in Charlotte.
Yep. You know, nothing really eventful as far as life goes. My parents did divorce in middle school, so, you know, some difficulties there, but. Mm. Other than that, just kind of going through the motions of school, and I danced for a long time and explored some other sports come high school time. So,
okay, what style of dance?
All kinds. My favorite was tap, though.
Oh, no way. That's really mm-hmm, cool. Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Wingate University, so kind of other side of Monroe.
Okay.
Towards the beach.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. And where did you and your husband meet?
We met online.
No way.
Yeah.
I like those stories. Uh-huh, I do. I think that's really cool. I'm watching Love is Blind right now. And, you know, everybody says it's not natural. And I'm like, no, it's no different than Match or an arranged marriage in India. It's
right,
kind of the same thing.
Like, it works,
you know,
for
what you want.
Different people.
Yeah. Molly and Squeaky met on, what was it, Bump, not Tinder? Or I don't remember what. But
I understand, but they're pushing it to get married within what, a month or two.
I know.
On the show.
I love Love is Blind. So listen, coming up, we're going to highlight 5 key points in the book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And I promise you, they will change your life. So do not go away. We will be right back on The Good Soul. Welcome back, universe. This is The Good Soul, episode 13. Our topic today, and I don't mean to sound so cheerful when I say this, but Man's Search for Meaning by a man named Viktor Frankl. The book was written in 1945. Viktor Frankl survived insurmountable and some unthinkable atrocities in 4 different concentration camps in Nazi Germany, and has come out to write a fantastic novel that has broken many milestones. It's been printed in over 21 different languages and has saved countless lives. And if you have not read Man's Search for Meaning, I highly recommend picking up a copy. And if you're not a reader, go on YouTube and just listen to the summary because it's worth it. Mm-hmm. It's worth it. I have to my left here, once again, Christy Kurtz. She's a friend, a student, and she is the owner of Foundations Integrative Wellness right here in Mooresville.
Right here.
Right here in Mooresville. So thing. She's taking new patients. So anybody that needs to get your head checked, she's your girl. I have full faith. So we're going to do, we're going to go over five different takeaways from this book for the rest of the remaining three segments. I'm going to read passages and kind of like my take on things. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to kind of build on that concept and kind of let me know again how you integrate the wisdom of this book into your practice. And also, we didn't get to it. We should get to EDMR and, of course, existential therapy.
Tongue twisters, both
actually,
of them.
Actually, why don't we do that right now? Let's sure. talk about the form of therapy you do, and then we'll yes. get into our five takeaways. So fill us in.
All right. So EMDR is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Whole mouthful. So EMDR is typically what you'll hear people say.
She sells seashells by the seashore. I'm
exactly.
Yes.
And just like existential is not easy to say either, but that's kind of Viktor Frankl's. He's kind of under that umbrella of therapy kind of mottos.
Okay, we talked about logotherapy. Is mm-hmm. existential and logotherapy, which is logo is Viktor Frankl's. Is that kind of tied together?
Exactly. Yeah. All in the meaning making of life. And just like if you think existential crisis, just like the big picture things of life.
Okay. So Man's Search for Meaning, it's kind of like an iPod is so easy. It's hard. The overarching message with logotherapy or with existential therapy is meaning mm-hmm. is what purpose is what motivates us and drives us and keeps us alive.
Right, right.
And can save us in mm-hmm. crisis.
Yeah. Okay. And just kind of the notion of the simpler form sometimes is the best answer.
Okay. So in other words, we don't necessarily have to sit down. Like I remember at one point somebody I loved was going through a bit of a crisis and she was having panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, you know, we don't have to lay you down and talk about how your mama didn't give you enough love or mm-hmm. what your third grade teacher did to you or how you were bullied and embarrassed and somebody pulled your pants down in the middle of gym class. We don't have to go over all that stuff. We can kind of keep it plain and simple. Is that something?
Existential, yes. That's kind of you stay in the present moment and look forward to things. You don't necessarily dig into the past. Whereas EMDR, that's where the past work comes into play.
Okay. How did you decide on these two methods? What inspired you?
So trauma work is really important to me. I think, you know, there's a lot of diagnosis out there that people are, you know, getting labeled with. But if you really dig down to it, it's probably trauma in the past. And that's the big thing with big T trauma versus little T trauma. Big T is kind of your classic. You've gone to war and experienced an explosion or something of that nature. Whereas little T trauma could be something like a girl got a sandwich stolen on the playground. And when I went through training, that was something that our trainer talked a lot about. He was like, it took one of my clients longer to process through the sandwich being stolen than a more traumatic event later in her life. Because at 5, it's much more traumatic. And she felt that betrayal and those emotions that go along with a 5-year-old, you know, less tools in your toolbox, so to speak, to handle it at that age versus later in life, you have other things to kind of pull from.
Sure.
To work through it.
And to me, it's all relative. Mm-hmm. You know, we can make fun of the beauty queen in tears, right? But
yeah.
The reality is her emotions are just as valid as the person who did suffer through, you know, something such as Viktor Frankl did.
Right.
It really is all relative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did you figure that out while you were in school, what methods you would go at? Or did you go into school with those two goals in mind?
Started while I was in school. So when I started my program, kind of the first thing they wanted us to talk about and write papers on was what is your philosophy on how people change? Because if you don't believe people can change, therapist probably isn't the best form of career for you.
Okay.
Because that's what we're in the business for. We're trying to help people make changes, whether it be, you know, to stop using drugs or alcohol or to lose weight or to, you know, just learn how to be in a job setting.
Learn how to be happy.
And learn how to be happy.
Learn how to be happy. Mm-hmm. That's a biggie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to kind of keep weaving questions in and out about your experience and your kind of why you're tethered to this genius book we call Man's Search for Meaning. So again, we're going to get back now to our five takeaways. So I'm going to read my first and strongest takeaway from the book. Number one, we always retain the ability to choose our attitude. I'm going to say that again. We always retain the ability to choose our attitude. Frankl was a keen observer of human behavior and thought. One of Frankl's most profound observations was this, and I quote, "We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts, comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread." I'm going to get emotional here. "They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. Frankl and his fellow prisoners had everything stripped from them, their families, friends, jobs, health, possessions, even their names and the hair on their bodies. But there was one thing that remained truly their own. This is what Stoic philosophers refer to as our inner discourse or guiding principle. Namely, I'm going to say this again loud for the people in the cheap seats, we get to choose how to react to any given thought, emotion, or set of circumstances. In what ways can you help to influence those who feel helpless in any given situation?" In other words, back to what you were saying, can this be taught?
Mm-hmm.
You believe this can be taught.
Yes, yes. And that's some of it I've influenced with CBT therapy, so cognitive behavioral therapy. And that's where a lot of you learn how your thoughts are affecting you. And so that's where Frankl's talking about where in between stimulus and response, we have a choice to make there.
You're quoting him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know my man.
You know your answer to me.
Yes. And so that's, powerful in that knowing one, yes, we can change it. And two, there are tools to do that. And that's where CBT can be very helpful for people to learn to interrupt that pattern, because we think it's automatic. And yes, it is, because it's our pattern in our brain, mm-hmm. which is why I love EMDR, because it breaks that up in our brain to where we can change that pattern and make differences, because there is possibility to change it.
Okay, let's bring this down to street level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm home. I'm a soccer mom. I'm busy. I don't know that I'm ready to go to therapy. Are there tools and ways that we can explore this type of therapy, maybe on our own? Not taking away from what you
Yeah,
did,
yeah. No, just, absolutely.
Yeah, like,
for
I'm
sure.
curious.
Yeah, so for CBT, I would recommend something about just starting to pause in between the stimulus and the response. Because if we don't know how to pause, how do we interrupt it?
Yeah.
So that's even like the first part of pause and acknowledge, okay, this is what I'm responding to, and I'm going to reel it back.
Okay. So in other words, when you back your car into the mailbox and you put two scratches on the side of it and your husband notices and tells you need to slow down, rather than me wanting to scratch his eyeballs out, I just need to take a deep breath,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And he needs to take a deep breath and understand that accidents happen. So and I'm being funny, but
right.
This happened yesterday.
Yeah,
He found a scratch.
Fresh
on
your mind.
Could you tell? Could you tell?
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, but I like that. I like that. Just taking mm-hmm. a beat, in other words.
Yes, 100%.
Okay. So I'm going to continue on. Even though conditions such as lack of sleep, insufficient food, and various mental stresses may suggest that the inmates were bound to react in certain ways, the final analysis, it becomes clear that the sort of person the prisoner became was a result of an inner decision and not the result of camp influences alone. So consider camp influences, guys, like real life, like work, people that annoy you on the street.
Yep.
So fundamentally then, any man can, under such circumstances, decide what shall become of him, mentally and spiritually. No matter what life experiences we confront, we always have the inner freedom to decide our attitude and remain true to our character and duty. Molly Jane says this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You get to decide. You get to decide the quality of your circumstance. I'm going to quick hop on to
item
number two. There will be suffering. It's how we react to the suffering that counts. Frankl claims that one finds meaning in life through three ways: through work, especially when work is both creative in nature and aligned with a purpose greater than ourselves. 2, through love, which often manifests itself in the service of others. And 3, through suffering, which is a test through Frankl's experience in the concentration camp. I quote Frankl, "If there is a meaning in life at all, then there must be a meaning in suffering. Suffering is an ineradicable part of life, even as fate and death. Without suffering and death, human life cannot be complete. The test then for all of us is how we respond to the suffering in our lives, the way in which a man accepts his fate and all suffering it entails. The way in which he takes up his cross gives him ample opportunity, even under the most difficult circumstances, and a deeper meaning to his life." So I'm going to hit pause on that. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to rewind and listen to that again, that was a really powerful passage. And when we come back, I want to talk to Chrissy about your feelings on suffering. And we're going to talk a little bit about the term psychohygiene.
Yes.
So guys, really powerful stuff. I hope you're feeling like I am. Are you feeling like, yeah.
Yeah. There's power in here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just love really benefiting. I mean, I've always been intrigued by the stories of World War II in all the right ways. I'm not trivializing it. So I hope you guys feel the same way. Man's Search for Meaning, guys. The Good Soul episode 13. Don't move your booty. Don't go away. We'll be back in just 3 shakes of a lamb's tail. Welcome back, Good Soul fam. Thanks for being here. Episode 13, we are talking Viktor Frankl's World War II epic book, Man's Search for Meaning, that has broken major, major milestones throughout the history of self-help, especially in the modern world. The book was written in 1945. So we left off on our last segment talking about how there will be suffering, and it's how we react to suffering that counts. And that kind of ties into what we talked about earlier, and can this be taught, and kind of finding that space. What was the quote?
Between stimulus and response, you have a choice to make.
You have a choice to make. So I say this repeatedly. We have the power. Yeah, well, over there, Tonto, you listen, because sometimes he gets triggered like most men.
Right.
And I do too. So he's making a face at me. But remember, you got to stop and take a breath. You have to stop and take
a
breath.
I don't believe you're saying this to me. This needs to step back and be here for a second.
It's an everybody thing.
How we learn. You want to come over here. Wow. Why don't you sit down? You want to think? Can you do couples counseling too?
Sure. Come on.
Well, Chris McClure, when he was here after we were done, that episode was called Mental Fitness. I think it's episode 3. He sat and talked to us for like an hour, which was great. And I said, "Will you counsel?" He said, "No, I really can't counsel you, but we can go out and have coffee and we can talk." And I was like,
100%, oh, okay. Right?
Yeah, so come on, pull up a chair, baby. All right. So psychohygiene, this is something that really resonated with me. So psychohygiene was one of his big arguments, Viktor Frankl, that it was physical survival of the torture of these camps was not enough. Mm-hmm. And that it was important for the detainees to ensure that camp was, that they were mental survivors of the camp. And we talked about this a little bit before the show started, and I think this is really important. I just want to touch on something, and then you can kind of expand on it. We talked about a lot of people who are brought into the world with a leg up. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that's not all that it takes, right? So you can have all the things around you or the support, but sometimes some people that are born in the most pristine of circumstances, it doesn't always turn out that way. So what do you think about that psychohygiene?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. And I also think about how the notion of like trust fund babies are never truly happy because they don't have that suffering. Mm. In the same way that people who have to work for their money, so to speak, or have to work and build a business or have to work and put food on the table. So I think there's, you know, some information there that we can gather of you got to go through the mud.
Yeah. I had a conversation. I love Beyonce's new album, Cowboy Carter. Mm-hmm. I think it's brilliant, which led me to talking about Homecoming. And if you saw Homecoming on Netflix, it's per two, they do the exact same performance 2 weeks in a row at Coachella.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this was probably Coachella, I think maybe 2019, 2020, I'm not sure. But if you guys want to watch something great, watch Homecoming on Netflix, and you'll see truly some magic. So back in like the early 00s, I would always go see Madonna. I would invest $1,000 into a ticket, and I would sit at the front row, and I would go by myself, and it's genius. It's performance. It's Cirque du Soleil meets, you know, Versace meets her singing. And she always used to say, I'm not the best singer, I'm not the best dresser, but I know how to tie it up and put it in a package. And she did. Uh-huh. And despite what's going on with her now, which I'm judging nobody, whatever makes her happy, I was comparing the Madonna performance to the Beyoncé performance. And I don't know why this bubbled up in my heart, but I think where Beyoncé has the advantage is, I mean, there's no question in terms of singing and dancing abilities. There's definitely more raw talent in Beyoncé. Mm-hmm. Maybe not dancing, but definitely singing. But beyond that, Beyoncé had this like power of, and maybe not her directly, because Beyoncé could have been raised like in a middle class, you know, had the perfect life. I don't really know too much about her. I don't think she grew up in the skids. But she had like the history of the Black plight behind her,
right,
which she's very much used to her advantage. And if you go to a place like New Orleans and you study like the voodoo culture and Congo Square and you feel what it feels like, you feel the beauty that they've turned their pain into. Have you been to New Orleans?
I have not, no.
It's like it can't be manufactured. And she captures that. She captures that in Homecoming. And if anybody's at all a fan of New Orleans or has been to something like Jazz Fest, you can feel that like that's something that I wish I had in a way.
There's
like
an essence to it. And I think manufactured makes, you know, it's a good way to highlight that, because you can't manufacture the happiness. You can't manufacture the suffering. Like you go through what you go through, and that's the pureness of it. And you can't imitate pureness.
Yeah. That's what, and this is the whole idea behind not only the success of the book, Man's Search for Meaning, but the message of the book in Man's Search for Meaning is to find purpose. My father used to say, I'm sure in every religion there's some type of passage that says, turn your misfortune for good. Turn it all for good. So let's talk about the power of purpose. This is our third key takeaway. Frankl observed that those prisoners who survived found a way to endure always had a greater purpose that carried them onward through difficult conditions. For some, it was a child who was sheltered away in some distant country who was waiting for them upon liberation. For others, it was a spouse or a family member. For others, it was an unfinished task or creative work that required their unique contribution. Frankl and his friends were constantly on watch for fellow prisoners who lost their purpose in life. This is so powerful. It's like I have such a lump in my throat. So think about your kid is waiting for you. We're going to get a little bit later into his love for his wife, and we talked about this before the show. But I'm going to quote Viktor Frankl. The prisoner who has lost faith in his future was doomed. With his loss on belief in the future, he also lost his spiritual hold. He let himself decline and became subject to mental and physical decay. While working in a camp hospital, Frankl noticed the death rate spiked between Christmas and New Year's in 1944. He attributed the dramatic increase to the number of prisoners who were naively holding out hope for liberation before Christmas. As the end of the year drew closer, it became clear that their situation was unchanged and they lost courage and hope. In turn, it impacted their power of resistance and their ability to survive. So in Viktor Frankl's case, he talks about his love for his wife, his power of purpose. Do you use that power of purpose at all? And do you try to extract that from your clients when they come in?
I do. And I do it through the method of using some of the EMDR stuff, too, because logotherapy and existential doesn't give you tools, so to speak, to grasp on as a therapist to work with a client. So client wants to come in, they want actionable things that they can actually, you know, process through and work on. So with EMDR, that's how I kind of use as a vehicle to get there. And by that, I can help them change their story within whatever they're trying to reprocess, whatever trauma it is or whatever bad experience they had. They can then go through that and make new meaning out of it. and they can then find something new to hold on to. So it's like this adaptive information processing is what they call it. So you might not be able to make a memory positive, but you can neutralize it to where it's not affecting you and overwhelming you on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. And hopefully these purposes, right, these things that we're tethering our child, our love, they're the ones, that's what's keeping us alive, basically.
Right. And I was thinking of like an image of like the guy in the mine, like going towards the diamond treasure thing, but he stops right before he gets to it.
Yeah.
So it kind of reminds me of his quote of people dying before Christmas or around New Year's because they had this like end goal, but didn't know how to keep going past that end goal.
And they're like, phooey. Mm-hmm. Christmas came and went, and I'm not with my family.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, number four, the true test of our character is revealed in how we act. Frankl comes to the conclusion that there is no general answer to the meaning of life. Each person must answer the question for themselves. We find our own unique meaning based on our circumstances, our relationships, and our experiences. Life is essentially testing us, and the answer is revealed in how we respond. We need to stop asking about the meaning of life and instead think of ourselves as those who were being questioned by life daily and hourly. Our answer must consist and not talk in meditation, but in right action and right conduct. Life ultimately means taking responsibility to find the right answers to its problems and to fulfill its tasks, which it constantly sets for each individual. Therefore, the meaning of life is not found on some mountaintop, but rather it is revealed daily, hourly, in our choice to take the right action and perform our duties and responsibilities. In Man's Search for Meaning, Frankl's wife gives his life meaning and his goal of being reunited with her. While he is in the concentration camps, he is sustained by thinking about her and talking to her in his mind. This is one of my favorite quotes of any book. In the history of forever. I've written this down in many journals. I screenshot it every time it comes up. And I quote Viktor Frankl. For the first time in my life, I saw the truth as it is set into song by so many poets, proclaimed as the final wisdom by so many thinkers. The truth is that love is the ultimate and highest goal to which man can aspire. Then I grasped the meaning of the greatest secret of that human poetry and human thought and belief have to impart. The salvation of man is through love and in love. And I have to say this, and we're getting close to the end of this segment, but how I think our love and everything about our relationship, man, how it's changed your physical health and how it's changed my life and allow me to flourish. Do you hear me? I'm talking to you.
You're ruining like the confessing. Moment.
I'm going to ask you, though. That's okay. We're getting close to the end. Listen, sit tight. As my husband, I'm trying to have this powerful moment with him, and he's worried about the clock. Sit tight, sweet friend. We'll be back. And on this break, I'm going to pummel my husband, and then we return. We will talk more about lesson five in Man's Search for Meaning. Don't go away. Welcome back, beautiful good soul fam. This is Man's Search for Meaning, episode 13. And no, my knuckles are not bloody and I did not pummel him. But now that I have his attention, I'm going to read this out loud one more time because it is so powerful and really represents a strong component to, I think, our love story and why we are where we are. And that is in a pretty damn good place. Mm-hmm. So Viktor Frankl on love. He just said he's on top of the world. Oh, thank you. For the first time in my life, I saw the truth as it's set into song by so many poets, proclaimed as the final wisdom by so many thinkers. The truth that love is the ultimate and highest goal to which man can aspire. Then I grasped the meaning of the greatest secret of human poetry and human thought and belief have to impart. The salvation of man is through love and in love. And I'm looking at my beautiful, sweet, amazing husband who...
Looking back at you.
He's looking right back at me. I wish you guys could see what I see. We need a Manny cam. No, seriously, where we were when we got together, Manny was newly diagnosed with MS. His ex-wife had left. And all due respect, I'm not saying that anything against her, but that he was in a pretty bad place. And it's amazing how there is, I saw through, I mean, his good looks didn't hurt, but I saw through every kind of shadow and obstacle. I saw right in through his heart. And I'm going to quote Rihanna in the song Stay. And it's one of my favorite lines. And I get verklempt when I hear the song. And she says, funny, you're the broken one, but I'm the only one who needed saving. And that's what I feel like in our relationship, that I was in a really bad, horrible, what was I thinking? I don't even want to call it relationship because it was like a sorry excuse for something. And yeah. I think I'm going to have a whole episode on that. But that day, I don't want you here. I know we're going to have a substitute producer that day. But that that he really came in. My father was sick. My mother had just died. And this love story really kind of uncovered and brought out so much good. And what we say to the girls all the time is when you're with somebody, you want them to make you better. And that's kind of what this strong force. I mean, what a force it is. So thank you. He said that's between both of us. No, thank you for that and so many more that you continue to give me and continue to build on. So let's talk human kindness, because this is really powerful to me. This really probably the most emotional parts of the book to me. I mean, the love thing is beautiful. This really hits hard. One would assume that camp guards and camp commanders were, as a whole, terrible people. However, Frankel occasionally experienced startling moments of human kindness from guards. Frankel recalls a time when a guard, at great risk to himself, secretly gave him a piece of bread. And I quote Frankel, "It was far more than the small piece of bread which moved me to tears at the time. It was the human something that this man gave me, the word and look which accompanied the gift. At the same time, the senior prison warden, who was a prisoner himself, beat other prisoners at the slightest opportunity." In other words, the Nazi guard was kind and showed Victor warmth, whereas the senior prisoner, who was actually a prisoner, was pretty much demonic, is what he makes it sound like.
Right.
So I'm going to give another quote. "The mere knowledge that man was either a camp guard or a prisoner tells us almost nothing. Human kindness can be found in all groups, even those who, as a whole, it would be easy to condemn. Frankel claims that there are really two types of people, decent human beings and indecent human beings. Both can be found everywhere. They penetrate every group and every society. Life in a concentration camp tore open the human soul and exposed its depths." And guys, I'm going to hit pause. I'm still quoting him. But can't we relate, like, how the hard times, the difficult challenges, the pain, how it tears us open and really shows us who we are.
Yeah.
Is it surprising that in those depths, again, we find human qualities, which in their very nature were a mixture of good and evil? We spoke about this during show prep. I'm of the belief that we all have everything within all of us. Mm-hmm. And I had asked you, has psychology changed? In other words, was it very black and white back in 1945, but whereas now we're a little bit more open and a little bit, I don't know if we'd softer is the word?
We're definitely more open. So it's kind of, it went from Freud kind of being the creator, so to speak, of therapy. And, you know, he had the whole psychoanalysis shtick where you laid on the couch, you just kind of rattled off different things and the therapist would kind of interpret whatever that
kind
is.
Kind of like, tell me about your mother.
Exactly. Yeah. That was his quote, for sure.
Oh, was it really?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah, that's Freud in a nutshell.
Oh, look at that. Well, maybe I
he thought everything was based around your mother and she was the issue.
Oh, okay.
And so
I
now
think it's all my dad's fault. No, my dad was the best. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. And so now we've evolved to things like EMDR and CBT, where we can either boil it down, make it very simple, just like earlier with the pause between stimulus response. Or we can make it more complex and we process through our trauma with EMDR and other trauma forms of therapy. So I think we've opened up the perspective, not necessarily gone from black and white to, you know, a broader range of things. It's kind of, it went from a different style to where things are now.
Okay. Funny, I'm just thinking how it would have been to actually counsel one of these soldiers. I mean, the patients, again, goes without saying, but
yeah,
we were talking a little bit about this. So Manny and I are just finishing. We have two episodes left on A New Look, and it's the story of Christian Dior and Coco Chanel. and their experience in Nazi Paris mm-hmm. in the early to mid 40s. And we all kind of sit back like, I would never. And Coco Chanel was pretty much canceled. And I knew bits and pieces of this story. And we still have two episodes left, but for fraternizing with the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And she had fallen in love with actually a Nazi soldier. His name was, last name was Spatz. And, you know, you sit in judgment and you wonder. Dior was making dresses for ball gowns for the Nazi wives. And, you know, all the people on the streets are, you know, kill him. And mm-hmm. not so much with Dior, but definitely with Chanel. She had ended up, she fled to Sweden. Mm. But then you ask yourself, for me as a business owner, and you can ask yourself this in your own right, what would you do? What would you do? They come to Mooresville, they come to Good Soul with their guns, mm-hmm. and they say, teach our wives yoga, or we're going to shut you down. We're going to take you and your family off to a labor camp where you're probably going to be dead in 2 weeks to a month. You're going to be separated from the people you love. Your husband isn't going to have his tech federa. He's not getting his medication. We're going to kill him. He can't even walk straight. He has MS. Uh-huh. So what do you do? You know, and you have to ask yourself, and this by no means, I mean, no disrespect to anybody who had to suffer through the Holocaust, who survived or perished, by no means. But you just start to ask yourself, and not only as victims, right, but also as soldiers. Mm-hmm. Because how many times am I scratching my head? How did he get all of these people to subscribe to his way of belief? I don't even want to say the man's name, the H word. Mm-hmm. But how? The same reason why I would have taught them yoga. They would have ended up dead, right? And it's really frightening. And this is where the whole control thing comes in. The whole, you know.
Control. Mind control. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think the cavemen even needed people like you from, I mean, we're all flawed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the biggest saying? Who said we're all just walking each other home? I think it was Ram Dass. It's a yogic saying. Okay. Like, we're all just, and Chris McClure said something really cool. I was having a rough week last week, and he said, basically, I spend most of my life trying to downshift. So we're all just trying, even sitting here, we just want to keep calm. We want to tame our fears and tame our anxieties and just be happy.
Contribute?
Yeah.
Does it believe or don't believe?
Well, this is also, I think, why a lot of people, you know, drink and use drugs, because it takes you from having to stop trying to downshift.
Right. It does it for you.
It does it for you. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Let's finish on this really, really powerful passage. We are not victims. So my biggest overall lesson that I carried with me and truly live by is the idea that we're not victims. We may be obviously victims of certain circumstances, but in the end, our life is shaped by how we live and through the hardships and losses that befall us. Changing our mindset out of victim mode is our work. Not easy, but doable. It's far easier to live by the woe is me, look at what happened to me, as if this didn't happen, I would be this or that. Or the other thing, but it leaves us living small and stuck in lives of misery. And I might add, self-inflicted misery. The choice is ours. We must realize we have a choice. So back to what Molly Jane 100%. Said, back to what Viktor Frankl said, and back mm-hmm. to what amazing Christy Kurtz says, that we have a choice. I'm going to read one more thing, because this stuff is powerful. Renewed meaning and purpose. We obviously don't ask for hardships and challenges, but once they're there, we must create renewed meaning and purpose so we can live on well despite it all. Look at somebody like Christopher Reeves, who recreated his life after his paralysis by impacting people in a far greater way than when he was Superman. According mm-hmm, to him, he was quoted as saying that. And there are upteen numbers of those who have not just survived but thrived. Guys, it's our moral imperative to do that.
Yes.
We must.
We can thrive.
We can thrive, especially not only in the days of cavemen, Nazi Germany, but now. Mm-hmm. It is in our hands, and we must stay unified in the process. We must understand and accept each other's differences. So, thank you, Christy Kurtz. That was amazing. I could go on and on and on. Yes, my husband wants me to say it again, to accept each other's differences.
Yes.
So, thank you for being here. Thank you for watching. Comment, like, share, keep coming back. We're going to keep bringing you these fun topics and hopefully stimulate and entertain and inspire you all at once. You can catch us on Saturday mornings, 105.9 FM from 9 to 10, and on all your favorite platforms. So guys, remember, if you can't be kind, just be kind. Chrissy's kind all the time, so I don't have to say that to her. But guys, we love you. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're having so much fun in this process. Keep coming back. Peace, love, namaste.